Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to Getting Savvy in Health, Wealth, and Beauty. Important to note that everything is for entertainment purposes only. Please do speak and meet with a financial advisor before making any investment decisions. And also, please meet and speak with your GP before making any health or beauty decisions.
All right, Melissa, we are filming once again. And there's been a lot that's happened in the market this week. The markets have essentially had a V-shaped recovery. I'll explain what that is a little bit later. So just a number of, I thought, really interesting news items to go over. And then also, of course, to address, the why we're doing this. What's on your docket?
So GLP-1s are in the news again. I feel like we talk about this every week, but it seems that week after week, there's more data and more studies coming out. So I wanted to talk about a new study on those related to cancer prevention. And then I also wanted to talk about creatine, because more and more of my patients are asking me whether they should be taking creatine. We're hearing more about it. This is becoming a billion-dollar industry. And so I thought, why don't I help people understand what it is, what the benefits are, how to take it. And we can also talk a little bit about, you know, why it's important to do an annual physical and why it's important to do an annual wealth review as well. So an annual health review.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's start with that, the kind of the why and why we're doing this. You know, I just think it's so important for, you know, and I know maybe that's the wrong way to even say it, but like, if you start to have your money make you money, it allows you to have so much more freedom. And I think that one of the things that most women, and I hate to say it this way, but that most people don't have economic freedom. And, you know, most people have a job, maybe they'll have a couple of jobs in their lifetime, but there's, in some ways, there's limited upside. And by the way, maybe they don't want to put all of their eggs into their career, which I completely understand. I did it. And speaking of eggs, like, I didn't end up having children, right? Like, I was so busy on work on Wall Street and then busy on TV, and I didn't rush, you know, getting into the whole married life. And, you know, and it shouldn't be an either or. And what I'm saying is that if you can, at a young age or any age, my mother started her RSP at age 60, okay? She's turning 90. So think of that 30 years of compounding with just a little bit of money. She has a whole nest egg now. So regardless of what age you're at, you know, just start. And it's not scary. We can talk about, again, how to go about that. But, you know, it really allows you to make sure you can always have a roof over your head. I know that sounds odd for a lot of people. You know, they think, well, I'm married and the life is fine and whatever. I always plan, like, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen to the Canadian economy, Western civilization. I mean, that's a whole nother topic. It's going to be fine. But, you know, you want to make sure you've got money set aside and your money working for you. And that's what investing is. It's taking your paycheck, $50 aside every month, and putting it into the market or a stock or something that's deliberate.
So I follow David Chiltern, the wealthy, he wrote the famous book, The Wealthy Barber, and it was one of the first financial books that I read. And he did a post the other day talking about how he interviewed two families that basically made the same amount of money, they had the same expenses, yet one of the families was able to put aside money to save a little bit each month, and the other family wasn't. And he said, well, what's the difference? And the difference was one of the families was wasting a lot of their money on car leases.
Oh.
And, you know, if you look, one of the families bought an older used car, paid for it outright. The other family was paying for, you know, to lease a car. So if you look at the $500 you're spending per month or the $1,000 you're spending per month to lease a fancy car, and instead of doing that, you put that aside into your TFSA or RSP and invest it in something safe like an index fund and just let it grow and compound over time, the difference in your financial outcome 20, 30 years later can be like astounding. So it's little things like that I think that people don't understand, that are like, oh, like a lot of people, like, we take it for granted that, oh, of course, you're going to put it aside. But I think the first and most important thing is figuring out how to keep track of your expenses, not to go into debt, make sure that you're not, you know, chasing that. Make sure that you spend within your means and that you have, you pay yourself first. Have a little bit put aside to save, and then you use the rest of it to budget on what you can live in. Because now, like in Canada, at 18 years old, you get a TFSA, and it's a wasted opportunity if you're not using it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's my favorite account to have. I'll get into that in a second. But to your point, pay yourself first. And I understand, you know, like think about it. Think about how much we're bombarded by buy this pretty thing. This will taste great, you know, do whatever. And the thing that I think tastes the best is watching your money make you money. I mean, I think it, and you know, people, we talk a little bit about this, the gamification, right, of various aspects in life. And I don't believe that as it relates to investing, but there is something about, you know, buying a stock, and there's like, there's a couple of different approaches. And I think that's important as well, right? Because I feel like a lot of younger people, and I hate to say it, but it tends to be on more on the male side. They tend to be more traders, right? Mm-hmm. And they tend to want to buy the stock that's going to go up 100 times. I just buy, and we've talked a lot about this, I buy good companies, I buy indices, I buy things when I think there's a good buying opportunity because the stock's been hit. And then if there's a little bit of market movement, and I'm going to talk about one thing I did, I bought and sold over the past 3 weeks, and I made about 12% in 3 weeks. Like that's great money. I didn't put a lot of money at work because I was kind of just testing out my little trading ability. But importantly, that dovetails into the TFSA. And what I love about the TFSA is the money that you make in there is tax-free. It isn't an RSP as well, but the big difference is with the TFSA, you can generate returns in that account and you can take it out without paying taxes. In an RSP, you're paying taxes. So the TFSA is a nice way, you know, to incentivize you to start investing, because then if you put your money in, you make some money, you're able to take it out and use that for maybe a down payment, you know, or for maybe a vacation, right? Because it's going to be, you know, even if you just make a couple extra $1,000, that's a couple extra $1,000 that your employer is not giving you, right? You're not earning it and you don't want to take a third, fourth, second job. So it's just, I look at investing some ways as it's another job for me.
Yeah, 100%. It's a source of income. And they often talk about people have multiple sources and streams of income. So you have your job, you might have a side hustle, and then you have your investments that, yeah, like you said, are hopefully paying you a return. But I wanted to talk about how, you know, up until this week, it's been negative, negative, negative. The markets have been down. People have seen their accounts lose money. And hopefully, you know, the advice is don't panic sell, just wait. And I know we talked last week about how you went shopping. Well, you must have been happy that you went shopping.
I'm very happy.
Yeah. How do you think that means? Yeah.
Okay, right. So in case you missed last week. So yeah, I started off by saying I went shopping and you were all excited because you thought closed. And I'm like, no, I went shopping in the market, in the stock market. And I bought Google. And so I'm up nicely on that. And I bought NVIDIA. Mm. And what else? I bought a couple other things.
Think you bought the QQQ, right? Didn't you just buy the NASDAQ?
I did. I bought the NASDAQ. Good memory. Yeah. Thank you. I did. And here's the important thing. I did not want to use my American dollars. I had a lot of Canadian dollars sitting there. So I used an ETF by BMO. Mm-hmm. That I can use Canadian dollars, but it invests in the US NASDAQ. So you're able to actually use your Canadian dollars if you're sitting there and saying, well, I'm not so sure about the Canadian economy, the Canadian market. It's not that exciting to me because it's not that exciting to me right now, but I want exposure to the market. You can use, and all these, you know, banks have them, you know, ETFs that represent indices or, sectors. Mm-hmm. Or indices like the NASDAQ in the United States. And the NASDAQ, for everybody to know, is really tech weighted. So if you're sitting there and saying, I wish I could buy Amazon or Google or Apple, but I don't have US dollars, you can buy the NASDAQ, which represents all of them. All of those companies are in the NASDAQ. So that's what I did. And and I'm happy about it. And I looked at buying a couple of other ones. I didn't buy Uber. I didn't buy Amazon. But I I think I still will. Mm-hmm. What I would say though is sometimes, you know, when the market is having these moves and it has moved up, you want to take a pause, because the reality is there's always movement in the market. And so if I can get the other stocks that I bought, like NVIDIA has been out of favor, right? Because there's the concern that they're not going to be allowed to sell their chips to China, their AI chips to China. They can sell other chips. But what came out this past week is that they're going to be able to sell their AI chips to Saudi Arabia. So this, if anybody missed this piece of news, President Trump went to Saudi Arabia this week and, you know, has struck some nice deals there and brought along with him the CEO of NVIDIA, as well as Amazon, to help build out, you know, their AI, their businesses. So so that was another positive in the market.
I was playing around, I told you yesterday, playing around a little bit with ChatGPT and just sort of giving it prompts and saying, okay, so list the most undervalued stocks in the S&P 500 right now. Okay. Mm-hmm. We've talked about PE ratios and things like that. So where can we find some value? And then it gave me, and I was just doing this just sort of curious, just to see. And then it gave me a list and it said, of those stocks, which of them are currently buying, actively buying back shares? And then it gave me a list. And so in that list, one of them was, and then just to try to get an idea of where you might be looking in terms of potential value or mm-hmm. growth or, you know, and NVIDIA was one of them. So they're saying, you know, if you didn't get into that, I mean, people have exposure to it. Like, from my understanding, people have exposure to it if you own the index that represents the S&P 500.
Right.
But if you don't own it outright, that now could be a time. Anyhow, for me, I'm still very, you know, this isn't my field of expertise. I can dabble around with ChatGPT a little bit. I'm still much more heavily weighted in just index funds. Mm-hmm. But if I'm looking at them right now, I was thinking that right now I don't own the NASDAQ and I only own S&P 500, mm-hmm. but I really believe in AI and tech. And so I want to be a little bit more heavily weighted that way. So I probably will buy the NASDAQ as well. Anyhow, I just think it's interesting learning. And, you know, when I talk about stocks and investing, mm-hmm. you know, I kind of liken it to when my patients, who are very successful and savvy in business, and they come in and talk to me about, well, I was on ChatGPT, and what do you think about this new, you know, should I be doing a full body MRI, and should I be doing all this? So they're learning about health in the same way I'm learning about wealth. And they may not have the confidence yet just to go and book those things on their own, but at least they're starting the discussion and they're learning the right information. So me learning about wealth is the same thing. You just have to take ownership and be an advocate for your own health and wealth, because no one's going to do it for you. No one's sitting there at the bank saying, oh, I'm thinking about Melissa and is she investing? And, you know, your doctor's busy and they're not sitting there thinking about, oh, that patient forgot to book in their physical. They're busy. You have to be an advocate for your own success.
You do.
So, anyhow.
You do. No, that's it's a great point. And, you know, and that's why we've got it, getting savvy in health and wealth. Like what I mean, there's a lot of other things in life, but what, these are your two critical points, right? Like put on the oxygen mask first.
Thin, right? Who said that?
What's that?
Who is that quote? You can never be too rich or too thin. Was that Coco Chanel or Audrey Hepburn? Someone, I forget.
I don't know. Okay. Speaking of too thin, then talk to us about the GLP-1s.
Oh my gosh, these are just in the news every single week because there's so many new studies on them. So I saw two interesting studies that I wanted to talk about. So first off, results came out of the head-to-head trial between Mounjaro or tirzepatide and Ozempic, which is semaglutide, and not for diabetes, just for weight loss. So they looked at these two head-to-head to see which resulted in a greater percentage of weight loss. And they looked at this for over a year and a half, so not just short-term. And what do you think the winner was?
Countless.
Tirzepatide, Mounjaro. So people on Mounjaro lost 20% of their weight on average, whereas people on Ozempic or semaglutide lost 13%.
Wow.
So what does that mean? So if you're not a numbers person, you know, if you're 200 pounds and you go on tirzepatide, you lost 40 pounds in a year and a half. Whereas if you went on Mounjaro, you lost closer to 30 pounds. So both great, but they did better on Mounjaro. So then it asks you, well, so why wouldn't we just put everybody on Mounjaro?
Mm-hmm.
Here in Canada, it's more expensive. And most people do great on semaglutide as well. So in my practice, mm-hmm. more often than not, I start people on semaglutide. And if they're not reaching their goals or if they're plateauing, then I might switch them to tirzepatide.
And sorry, Melissa, what's the difference? Like why? I don't understand. Yeah.
So tirzepatide, which is Mounjaro, works on an extra receptor. So it's a combined agonist. Semaglutide only works on GLP-1. It's a GLP-1 agonist, whereas Mounjaro is a GLP-1 and GIP, I think it is, agonist.
Okay.
Two different receptors. And now, and tirzepatide is the Eli Lilly drug, and Ozempic is the, or semaglutide, is the Novo Nordisk drug.
Which has dramatically declined in price, stock.
A lot.
Yeah.
And I find this so fascinating with investing in companies and stocks. You know, if you think, what's one of the most blockbuster products in the past year? What's the answer? Ozempic. And yet the makers of it have declined. So sometimes there's not always a direct correlation that the product mm-hmm. doesn't always equal the stock.
Mm-hmm.
I personally still think it's undervalued. Like, I still think that it has potential. It actually just, the stock increased a little bit in the past couple of days, because it's now paired up with another company that focuses on small molecule delivery. So they're looking at ways to make these obesity drugs like semaglutide more effective when you take them orally. And even though they do have an oral product, which is Rybelsus,
mm-hmm.
not as effective as taking it the injection. But a lot of people still find it useful. Anyhow, we'll see what becomes of these.
Yeah. Well, I think too, you know, one of the concerns I have, and it's reflected in some of the pharmaceutical stocks and the biotech stocks, and then there's an ETF that represents healthcare in the United States, and it has been an underperformer, and the reason is because drug pricing. Yeah. And so, you know, when we think about, you talked about the price of these drugs, what is that going to look like under President Trump, right? When, you know, the United States has all the research, but then you can get the drugs cheaper in Europe, as an example. So, A, how much pricing power will they have that's keeping, you know, these stocks from moving? And then also, you know, from the bio, we talked a little bit about this, but biotech stocks, they're research heavy. And with the pullback in research funding at some of these universities that have been anti-Semitic, which I completely agree with, pull back that funding. There's the concern by some people, well, what does that mean for all these research products that we have that are going to develop the next XYZ drug? So some of the biotech companies have been under pressure as well. So until that cloud gets lifted, there's still a lot of uncertainty for me as it relates to those companies. At some point, to your point about valuation, it will be, you know, I won't say a screaming buy. These are, again, words that we use on Wall Street. But it might look very attractive, whereby I'm willing to take the risk to wait it out. Mm-hmm. And so much of that negative news is in the stock and or the sector.
So I think Trump came out with something this week saying he's giving the pharmaceutical companies a certain amount of time to reduce their prices.
And yes. Prices. Yeah. I didn't look into it further than that headline, but yeah.
Yeah, same. But okay, let's see.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, I feel like with Trump, he's like that parent that's like, you don't do this, you're going to lose your iPhone for a month. But then after a week, he gives it back.
Well.
Like with tariffs, yeah, you know.
So, well, speaking of which, let's talk a little bit about that. And quite frankly, the success that has been made. And going back to last Thursday, Friday, why did I go shopping in the market? Was because I thought, you know what? There will be some concessions made. He will make some deals, which he did, particularly with China. Those tariffs got dropped dramatically. Mm-hmm. Then he went to Saudi Arabia. And just as an example, so NVIDIA is initially going to supply Saudi Arabia's new AI company, which is called Humane, if I got the pronunciation right, with 18,000 GB300 Grace Blackwell products. Okay, that's their top end. I think that's their top end chip for AI. So 18,000, and so it's a big deal, and it helped the stock, and again, that was another reason, you know, to show that President Trump is making these deals. He's looking at this as a business, and he's helping American companies in doing so. And yeah. What's been so interesting is to see what's called the V-shaped recovery. Okay, so when the market goes down significantly, a lot strategists on Wall Street will say, well, is it going to be a U-shaped recovery? Is it going to take a long time to get back up? Is it going to be flat for a while, like L-shape? Like, there's all these wording. Mm-hmm. And one of the strategists who I've followed for years, he used to be at J.P. Morgan, very well respected. He's Tom Lee. He's at Fundstrat. That's his company now. He was on CNBC the other day, and I do watch CNBC every day. And he said, you know, it's a V-shaped recovery. And we're actually almost at the November highs when he won the election. And so, you know, I you asked me why I went shopping last week, and I could only talk about the fact that I see him making these deals. And they're not just deals. These are business negotiations. These are long-term business relationships. So deal to me sounds short-term. These are significant. And I wish we had more for Canada. That's a whole nother subject matter that we haven't done in 10 years. But that aside, that's one reason why I liked the market and like it. But we haven't even seen really what he's going to do as it relates to deregulation. Mm-hmm. So opening up the markets for American companies within America. Mm-hmm. And then also tax reduction. Mm-hmm. And then people will say, well, what's that going to do to the debt and deficit? That's a whole nother conversation. But I'm just saying these could be tailwinds for further market movements to the upside.
Yeah. I was also thinking in terms of like Elon Musk and all the work he's done alongside Trump with Doge. But meanwhile, all the moves that Trump were making were really affecting the Tesla stock negatively because Tesla relies so much on China for their rare earths, for the EV. And, mm-hmm. you know, and it, so it was sort of like, I feel like there was a conversation that Musk was like, all right, buddy, enough. You know? And then we need people like you again because people were getting very sour on Trump. I mean, this is just what I picture.
I know.
You know. I'm mad at myself because remember we talk about how Tesla was the one stock I wanted to buy 10 years ago, 12 years, whenever it was, and I didn't.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks ago when we were on the podcast, I said to you, so... Mm-hmm. Are you thinking about buying more now? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's not down so much. You know, we kind of compared it to the Chanel purse. And then I was actually going to, at that point, step in. And I didn't because, you know, most people are, you know, for every good thought you have, if you don't turn it into action, it was just a thought. But I should have.
Yeah.
You know?
You should have. It's gone up dramatically.
I know.
But, you know, and so it went down. Like, I bought it low. I made like 60-some% in a very short amount of time. I didn't sell anything. Then it went back down again because there's some things I want to trade and there's some things I just want to own. And that's one of the ones I want to own. But the problem is it moves around a lot. I should probably trade it, but I didn't. But to your point, I should have bought more. And I thought about that. But I'm like, I don't know if I want more. I don't know if I want more.
Because if you get it to the Chanel bag, you're like, is it really so good? I don't know. But now that it's gone back up, you're like, yeah, I want that Chanel bag.
Well, yeah, and it's quite frankly, it's probably up another. It's probably up 70%.
Yeah.
Right. And so, could have made 70% in a short amount of time. So there are. I want to just point out though, Melissa, there are stocks that move like that. And they tend to be the growth stocks, just so people understand, because they're like, well, I couldn't handle that. And you might not be able to handle that. Or you can buy, you know, a stock that barely moves and you collect a dividend.
A nice dividend or just
yes.
Don't look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, let me just say, you can play offense and defense, right? You can have your growth, your go growth stocks, and then you can have your dividend stocks. And it's called a bit of a barbell approach.
Well, I think if you compare that to sports, to have a good team, you need to have both a good offense and a defense. So
right.
I think your portfolio, I think you should have both.
Yeah.
You know,
and get
the Leafs there.
Oh, yeah.
I just went to offense, defense. And did you watch that last game?
I didn't.
No, I think they lost 6-1, unfortunately.
Yes. Yeah, I heard. So one more to go. One more game to go. Well, hopefully more.
We'll see. No, not one more. Well.
Right.
I don't know.
They've got to get this game. Okay, go on.
I wanted to move on to the other study that I saw on GLP-1s, and this relates to cancer. Okay, so they are saying now that these GLP-1 drugs, so again, Ozempic, Mounjaro, Wegovy, they may reduce cancer risk by nearly 50%, significantly more than just weight loss alone. So there was a study done in Israel, and it had 6,400 patients, and they watched them over 8 years, okay? And they found that GLP-1s were 41% more effective at preventing cancer than bariatric surgery, so meaning like a gastric bypass, even when weight loss was the same. Okay, so why is that so significant? That means that what they looked at in this study was that, you know, if you were on Ozempic and you lost 40 pounds versus if you had a gastric bypass and lost 40 pounds, the people that were on Ozempic had less cancer diagnoses than the people that had the bariatric surgery. So why might that be? So they think that the mechanism goes beyond just the weight loss, that it has to do with reducing inflammation and enhancing the immune system. So it's better at, you know, stopping these early cancer cells from replicating further. And I mean, if you think about it, it's kind of intuitive, you know? If you want something to grow, what are you going to do? Feed it. Well, if you want something to die, what are you going to do? Starve it. And what do these drugs do? They starve you. You know? Plus, you know, so anyhow, it's very interesting. And it's profound if you think about it, because obesity is the second leading preventable risk factor for cancer. The first one is smoking. The second one is obesity. Okay. 50% of people are projected to get cancer at some point in their lifetime. So if GLP-1s can reduce this risk.
My God.
Yeah. There's a big argument to say that even if you're not obese, maybe you should be on it anyway for cancer reduction or cancer prevention. So like, this is important to me with my patients, because if I have a patient who has a strong family history of cancer, and let's say both their parents died of cancer in their 50s or 60s, and you know that this person has probably an increased genetic risk, you're going to be having that conversation about maybe you should be looking at being on these GLP-1 drugs. And it's, you know, when we're seeing the way they help with obesity, now that we're seeing that they help with reducing cancer risk, when we're seeing that they're helping with reducing adverse cardiovascular events, I mean, it makes you think that maybe they should be putting this in the water or that the government should be subsidizing it and paying for it, because it might reduce healthcare costs over the long term.
Look, I am actually a proponent of that.
Yeah.
I mean, people don't talk about it much, but I'm like, I don't know why, if you want it, it shouldn't be subsidized. Now, I think going back, you know, governments are wary of that because they don't necessarily know the long-term side effects. So you wouldn't necessarily want to be the government or the leader in place that is, you know, subsidizing this if down the road, because it's still early. Like, I know it's not necessarily early days to you, Melissa, because you have been prescribing this, I believe, for it's been around for a solid decade for diabetes. This whole new application, I think, is on the newer side. So what do you think about that?
I don't know. The safety profile seems to be good. The one thing that I can see is that it may pose a problem getting off of it. Like, if you get off of it and you've been on it for years, it may affect your ability to naturally produce your own GLP-1. So I've heard people compare sort of men who are on steroids or men that take testosterone. You know, let's say you're 18 and you're a bodybuilder and you start taking testosterone and you take it for 10 years. Well, then when you want to have kids at like age 30, what's happened is when you go off it, your testes stop being able to produce testosterone on its own. So you rely on having to take this drug for the rest of your life. You may see similar things with people on Ozempic, that if 10 years later they decide to go off it, now they need it because their body can't produce this GLP-1 on their own. So that I can see being a potential risk, but then why go off it? Like, most of the patients that I start on cholesterol medication, blood pressure medication, they're on it for life. They don't.
They are.
Yeah. And, you know, similarly, people that are on Botox.
Right.
You start doing Botox and most patients just keep doing Botox because it works. Now, eventually, could that happen? Like they say that with Botox, maybe it stops working as effectively. So maybe these drugs will stop working as effectively. But that's why there's so many new ones in the pipeline on how to make it more effective by targeting other receptors or, you know, so.
But just to be clear, Melissa, going back to the cancer study and GLPs, so it's not stomach cancer. It's just cancer over because
cancer is weight and obesity is an independent risk factor. Two, because it's reducing inflammation. And three, because it's enhancing your immune system. Those are the three mechanisms they think it's reducing cancer.
Wow.
What's interesting here is it's not just the weight loss because they looked at people on these drugs versus people who lost weight with other means. And the people on these drugs still had less cancer diagnoses. So it's huge. You know,
okay. So one of the concerns though, with the GLP ones, there's two that I want to bring up. One is there was a study that it can hurt your vision.
Yeah.
Right.
We talked about that a few weeks ago.
This
rare vision disease called Nyon, and that can cause blindness. So there is an increased risk of that for people that are on GLP-1s versus not. But I think it's like the disease is so rare, and it might lead to one in every 1,000 people may have an increased risk. So it's still minor compared to the benefit.
Okay.
But we don't really see many other...
Well, the other one that I want to bring up, which is a topic you want to talk about as well, is the risk that
muscle.
You know, why is it that people seem to be losing muscle on GLP-1s?
Well, this is what I want to see the study on also. I would be curious to look in that same study that showed in Israel that people that were on GLP-1s and lost weight compared to people who had bariatric surgery, how much more muscle did they lose on GLP-1s? Because all weight loss is going to be associated with some muscle loss because, you know, you lose glycogen, muscle, and fat when you lose weight. But I'm curious to see how much more you lose on these drugs because, yes, that is a concern. You don't want – I've seen in some, especially in some elderly patients on it, if they're not having enough protein, if they're not exercising – they can start looking a bit frail and you don't want to then lose the muscle mass and then lead to mortality in another way by, you know, having a fall, you know, or being less strong in that way. So muscle mass. So when I prescribe it, that's why I always talk about this. Like we have a very successful weight loss program at Wellness House and I do at my office as well. And we don't just prescribe it willy nilly. Like we will have people go on the InBody machine and look at their muscle mass and look at their body fat level and then track it a little bit. And if we see that they're just losing muscle and not losing fat, we need to intervene, right? Mm-hmm. And then it might not be the right intervention for them. Or if someone has very low muscle mass and wants to go on this, it's like, maybe it's not a good idea. Or we need to really discuss other things like training and, you know, creatine is a supplement I wanted to talk about today. So a lot of people are like, well, what is creatine? Like, does it build muscle? What does it do? So I think a really good way of thinking about creatine is an energy supplement. Hmm. So creatine increases performance and energy so that you can make more of your workouts. So it doesn't just, you don't just take it, sit at home and build muscle, but you take it, what it's showing is that you have more energy so that you can do more reps and therefore build more muscle.
Hmm.
So I thought this was interesting that we naturally produce creatine in our liver, in our brain, about 1 to 3 grams per day. But we need an additional 1 to 3 grams of creatine. So where do we get that from? You get that from meat and seafood. So if you're a vegetarian, you are probably not getting enough creatine and you should really strongly think about taking a creatine supplement. And even if you're a meat eater, especially if you're on these drugs and you don't have much of an appetite and you're not eating much, you need a pound of meat to get 2 grams of creatine. Most people, I don't recommend eating a pound of meat. That's, what's a pound? 16 ounces?
Oh my God.
16 ounce steak. Like most people on these drugs are sharing in a steak. They're having 40 ounces, right? So that's why creatine is an interesting to look into. And it has a very good safety profile. It's been around for a long time. doesn't really have any side effects other than for some people, if you take too much at the beginning, you can get some water retention. And for some people, it can give them some gastric upset, like diarrhea or tummy ache. But other than that, it's pretty well tolerated. So yeah, so I think that's why the creatine supplement industry is booming. Apparently,
is it
valued at $1.1 billion, and it's projected to hit $4 billion by 2030. And if they looked at the vitamin shop, and the sales rose 320% between 2019 and 2024.
Come on.
Yeah. So that's similar to, you know, people have been taking these GLP-1 drugs for the past, you know, 2-3 years.
2 years. So this is going to really ramp up.
Yeah. So
are we buying, we need to buy a producer of creatine.
Yeah. And it also says that it may, there's more benefits for women as well. It may slow bone loss in menopause. And there's studies saying it can also be good for memory, sleep, and cognition.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So, okay. So like, how do you take it? Right. So people are like, great, what do I get? So the recommendation is that, most people start with 3 to 5 grams per day. If you're taking this in a bodybuilding way, some of them load it and they take higher doses for a week and then they go down to like this lower dose.
Okay.
That's 3 to 5 grams a day. And if you're tolerating that, meaning, whoops.
Yep.
If you're not having water retention and if you're not having gastric upset, you could even go up to 10 grams a day to get more of that memory and cognition benefit. Yeah, so they're recommending that the type you take is creatine monohydrate. So it's like a powder that you would add to water or whatever in the morning. And, you know, have you heard of Dr. Eric Topol? He's one of the big anti-aging longevity.
No, I'm writing that down.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he has a new book that is called Super Agers. I haven't read it yet, but he was on the Mel Robbins podcast this past week, and I listened to it, and I can't say it was amazing, but it did have some good information. The interesting thing about him is he's very anti-supplement. He doesn't believe in any supplements. He doesn't think there's any evidence to say they work, but when you ask him, what's the one supplement if you were going to recommend, he then says creatine.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so
I asked you about this specifically creatine, well, on a couple of different fronts. One is like, you know, I know that as I've aged, you know, and having been a competitive figure skater, all you are is muscle, and you were a gymnast, all you are is muscle. Well, I'm a bit older than you and that changes.
Yeah.
And it's shocking to me. And so I've been working at it since January, and in about 3 months, I gained 6 pounds of muscle and lost 3 pounds of fat. But I still have to gain more muscle. So you and I talked about this, and I asked you specifically about creatine because in the Wall Street Journal, I think it was last Saturday, there was an article quoting, and I love it that it's Canadian, an article quoting a professor at the University of Regina who focuses in on creatine. And I wouldn't mind having him on our podcast just to kind of learn more about it and the doses and everything that he researches surrounding it. But I specifically asked you about it yesterday and bought it. So I'm going to start on it.
So I started. I'm curious to see if you get water retention, if you feel bloated, if you have any of those side effects. I'm also wearing my Pilates outfit. As soon as we get off this podcast, I'm going to work out because it's true. As you age, you start losing muscle and you really want to maintain this muscle for your metabolism to prevent falls. It's correlated with better aging. So
yeah, you look better when, you know.
And yeah, you know, so.
And the strength. But Melissa, you know, I think people probably saw you doing your Pilates the other day on your Instagram, and you said it's a lot harder than it looks, the way you were doing it. I'm sure there's lots of different variations of Pilates, but why is that? Like, what do you think it really does? Because I'm not into it yet.
Okay, so first of all, technique is everything. So you need to have a good instructor or a friend of mine also has this machine that she sells that you do it at home and it's almost like a Peloton Pilates machine where you have the screen and they have Pilates instructors there guiding you through it. So you need to have a good instructor because if you do it the wrong form, you're not going to get the benefit out of it.
Okay.
But then it's basically working your body against resistance and flexing it. And it's a lot like you will see your muscles shake They call it like the Pilates shake because your muscles are working so hard, especially isometrically. And I'll tell you, like, I'm not doing any cardio. I'm just doing that. And I heat up and I sweat and I become out of breath.
Because really?
When you're cold, okay, when your body's really cold, what does it naturally do? When you feel
produces, it tries to produce energy, tries to conserve.
How? What do you do when you're cold?
You shake.
Right? You curl your body up in a ball to reduce the surface area. Okay.
Yeah.
So your metabolism doesn't have to kick heat all like in a larger surface area. And you tense your muscles. And why do you tense your muscles? Because isometric muscle contraction burns a lot of calories, creates heat. Okay. So when you're doing Pilates, a lot of the exercises you're doing, yes, you're moving through an exercise, but then you're squeezing. And that squeezing is going to produce, burn calories and produce heat and build muscle, especially the smaller muscles, not just the large muscle groups. You would hit cycling or, you know.
And I think it's important to know you actually don't do much cardio. You walk fast.
I walk fast.
Okay.
I go for brisk walks. So if you see me walking outside, like I'm not, you know, I would say I do that maybe twice a week. And then I go on the recumbent bike, which I like to lie down because
what?
Recumbent bike, it's like the old person bike, but I like it because while I'm on it, I can be on my phone doing emails. Whereas if I'm running or on a stationary bike, I can't use my hands, whereas on the recumbent bike, I can. So I find that it's still a good way to get the cardio in.
Okay.
Allowing me to still do some work. And so I do that once a week, and then I play tennis once to twice a week. So I do probably get like cardio. I do five times a week. And, you know, if you listen to this Dr. Topple on the podcast, he says that you need to get like a minimum 30 minutes of cardiovascular exercise where you feel you're working up a sweat. You feel yourself 5 days a week. So I always say 150 minutes per week. So that's what you want to aim for. And I definitely do get that. If you can get more, even better. But that's where you start. If you're not getting that, you're doing yourself a big disservice when it comes to how your body and your brain is going to age.
Yeah. You need to
get that at a bare minimum and then add on the resistance and strength training twice a week.
Yeah. No, I mean that, and this, you know, we're going to conclude soon, but I think that that goes back to like, those are all great pieces of advice because, you know, starting at, you know, really 35, things start to change. And if you can kind of start to get some of these habits in earlier, I think it's so advantageous and it's easier than having to like really change your lifestyle at 47 or what have you. You know, it's easier if you can kind of, for anyone listening who's younger, but you can always also change. And I think too, that's the point. And that's what I always love, you know, love about like a new day, right? A new day, you can change your habits. You can add on to your great habits. You can get rid of one. And, you know, I mentioned this to you the other day, I showed it to you, but, you know, my husband and I were in LA and, you know, we were some investors who, you know, they're ex-military, right? They're top of the game in aspects of life, right? And they're all lean and they're all muscle, which means to your point, you're very diligent and you're very disciplined every day. And one of the gentlemen said to me, you know, he does it a personal KPI. So in business KPI, key performance indicators, let's have seven things that this company is going to measure themselves against. And let's make sure that we're going to continue to improve on those seven indicators. And if so, the company's going to be successful. Well, this guy does it on a personal basis and he breaks it down into certain areas. So I just the other day, Monday morning, created my own KPI. So what matters, how do I measure myself from a physical perspective? What do I need to do every day to achieve what I think I need to achieve? So that's, you know, working out, it's sleeping well, it's all these things. And I think I made an Excel spreadsheet and then I put the goals, like how many times a week I think I should do that. For the month. And I don't do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I just do, you know, number 1 through 31, right, the whole month, and then X off what I've done. And I think it's a nice way to keep track without being too hard on yourself, but just understanding what you think makes you tick and will have a better life.
And if you want to do it in a visual way, I mean, it goes back to having a calendar, buying some like mini stickers in different colors. And let's say you say green is cardio, blue is weights, is no alcohol, red is eating caloric intake per day. And then you see how many days of the month you get all those stickers. And
That's a cute way to do it. That sounds like some I'm doing Excel spreadsheet models and you're
you're
doing
the finance.
stars on a board.
I love it. All right, okay, I gotta run. I gotta go.
Okay, you gotta go. Go to your
All right.
Pilates.